a lot of people are talking about the elimination of the state and local tax deductions, which occurs in both versions of the new tax bill from the House and the Senate, which is about to go to reconciliation. But both versions have this elimination. And the question is, what does this do to the high tax states? There are many, many high tax states out there, as we mentioned a few of them. And one of the things to remember is if you live in a high tax state, there's no law that says you have to live there. You have the ability to relocate. In many cases, you have that ability, and you can relocate to a low-tax state and or a no-tax state, as one of our callers called in from, and that means you don't care about the elimination of the state income tax deduction because it doesn't apply to you. If you live in a no-tax state or even a low-tax state, it might not apply much. One of the things that is troublesome about this elimination, though, is we've talked about the double taxation problem. It is double taxation of your money. You've already paid money to your state, let's say, in state taxes, and then you are taxed on the money you paid back to the federal government. You're taxed on that money, a tax back to the federal government on money you paid out. And that's what is created, and that's the reason we've always had, since the beginning of income tax, we've had this deductibility of state and local taxes, and that's the reason. And so it will be a blatant case of double taxation where you will pay a federal tax on money you've already paid to your state or local jurisdiction. Take the Philadelphia wage tax. You pay the Philadelphia wage tax, which is several percent. Well, then you pay a federal tax on the money you already paid on the Philadelphia wage tax. That's just one example. There are many such examples, plus, of course, all the income state taxes. Now, local taxpayers are responsible for paying for local government services. Schools, road maintenance, fire control, on and on. All of the local taxpayers pay for the local government services. And now that they're double taxed on their income by losing the state and local tax deduction, basically they've had an increase in their costs. Their outgo has gone up on that basis because they still have to pay for all of those local services. And the federal government does not have to pay for those local services unless they get in trouble. And then if they need a bailout, the federal government has to throw the money in anyway, right? That's what historically has happened. So I think you will see some people relocate. Some people will vote with their feet, the ones that have the ability to do so. When they look at these numbers, I think some people will relocate to low or no tax states. And another group that should be wary of this would be anybody that's getting a public sector pension. If you're getting a public sector pension or if you plan to get a public sector pension, remember, your pension income is dependent on tax dollars flowing to you in that domicile, in that jurisdiction. Maybe it's a state, maybe it's a city, whatever it is. Maybe it's a county, whatever it is. It is taxpayer revenue that's going to pay your pension because guess what? There are very few, if any, pension accounts that are fully funded. So you are dependent as a public sector pension beneficiary now or in the future. You are dependent on that tax flow, and if people relocate, that could have a dramatic impact on that tax revenue flow. Another group that should be wary of this is municipal bond investors because municipal bond investment quality is going to matter more than ever. It's going to matter tremendously going forward because it could be costly, it could be detrimental to municipal bond issuers. And those are the words of the S&P raters. It could be costly and detrimental to municipal bond issuers to have the situation you have right now where people are incentivized to relocate out of high-tax states and certainly lays the foundation for a systemic distress in state and local financing. And I'm talking school districts as well, absolutely including school districts. They are funded by local tax money. So it's going to result in quite a sea change in the way money changes hands. It's going to affect the municipal bond issuers that are dependent on revenue that may decrease. It's going to affect public sector pension recipients today and in the future, dependent on tax revenue that may decrease. It's going to have a lot of ramifications. I think a lot of people are going to be surprised if the tax bill passes with this in it, this FIFO rule, at this brand new rule that will require you to sell your oldest shares, which, let's face it, in general, that's going to be your lowest cost shares. And I think that once that's passed in the future, that you will see investors, and this is a complete waste of time otherwise, but in connection with this, I guess it isn't, they'll be going out and they'll be opening accounts at various brokerage houses. So they'll have various lots of, and we're talking individual stocks, for example, they'll have various lots of individual stocks. And then when it comes time to sell, they can choose, I presume, whatever broker they want to sell. And then we won't be into this business where, oh, well, I have this old holding here and I have to sell this first. If you have a bunch of brokerage accounts spread all over the place, I don't think the government can tell you, you must do the trade through broker XYZ. I don't think they have the authority to do that. We shall see. I'm sure there will be plenty of pushback on this particular issue. But this FIFO issue, this kind of came out of left field. Oh, by the way, don't worry, the donors are protected. You know, the fat cat, the private equity managers, they're protected. Their carried interest loophole has been saved. The donors are protected. The private equity funds, they are protected because they're going to retain their carried interest loophole, which gives them the opportunity to classify their billions and billions of dollars in annual income at preferential capital gains rates. So they don't have to pay what someone taking a salary, someone taking a commission has to pay, which is, of course, the prevailing federal tax bracket. That won't apply to the muckety-mucks in private equity. As a result of their huge donations, they have been protected on their carry interest. Does that make you feel good? It makes them feel very, very good. If you would talk about a return on investment, if you give $10 million to a party and they reward you with $100 million in tax savings, that's called return on your investment. And that's a very good example of return on your investment. If you get your tax breaks in return for your donations in many, many multitudes of what you donated, you're a winner. Michael is with us, listening to the great KKOH Radio Reno. Hello, Michael.
Hi, Bob. Thank you for taking my call. I've been listening since 1996. You've actually made me one of those sharks. I end up going to college and becoming a financial advisor, but I still listen to you every weekend, and it's a little upsetting living in Nevada to feel like you're saying it's double taxation, that we have to feel sorry for their schools when we have our schools that we're able to support. Texas has their schools that are able to support. Why is it how has that been a loss to those people that live with a state that has out-of-control government?
Well, for those of us who live in places like Nevada and Texas, we don't face double taxation because we don't have that level of taxation. It only applies in states that have that level of taxation. And if you were in one of those states, which you are not, and if you paid 10% of your income in a state income tax, and then you did not get a deduction, which looks like it's going to be the future law, then in that case, you would then pay a federal tax on money you've already paid to the state.
But shouldn't the state government take control of that and control spending and the out-of-control social services and all those expenses that the rest of us have
to deal
with.
Well, I'll tell you what I think is going to happen in the real world. In the real world, I think what's going to happen is over time, this will take time, you will see more and more, you will see more and more stress on the states that lose revenue as a result of these tax changes. And that will eventually fall on the federal government. That's what I think will happen.
Why not the local government?
Because they'll run out of money. And I think they'll run out of money to an extent that, yes, they will cut services, and yes, more people will be on the outs as a result of it. I agree with that totally. But in addition to that, I think what you'll see is spillover into the inability to pay promised pensions to public workers, as I mentioned earlier. I think you'll see spillover into municipal bond ratings of such domiciles. I think this is a one-way street, and I think it's going to lead to a lot of unintended consequences.
I can see that, but do you realize that Nevada has a pension as well for their state workers, and it's fully funded, and the balance.
Well,
of the
you're talking about, and I appreciate that because you're in Reno, but you're talking about one of the best run states fiscally in the country, and to compare the great silver state of Nevada, to compare that. With all other 49 states is ridiculous. You're comparing a top rated diamond, the state of Nevada, fiscally. It's not perfect, by the way, but compared to the others, it's pretty good. And you're comparing that to 49 other states, which include a lot of lesser diamonds fiscally. I mean, take places like Illinois. It's a joke. The state of Illinois is a fiscal joke, and there are others that are not in good shape. So the bottom line in all of this is a lot of what you say is true, but the comparison is invalid because you're comparing it to states that have different problems, different populations, and really can't be compared straight up.
I appreciate that. That's a good
Michael, argument. I appreciate your call very much. Thank you for joining us. You make some good points, and I appreciate it. Now, we want to make the point that we made earlier one more time in case anyone missed it, and that is that there is one exception so far in the bill of the House and in the bill of the Senate on the deductibility of state and local taxes. There is one exception, and that is property taxes. And under the current proposals, that's all they are. They haven't been reconciled, and they haven't been finalized and passed and signed. Under the current proposals, the House and the Senate are allowing the deductibility of up to $10,000 a year in property taxes. All the other taxes, state income taxes, local income taxes, state and local sales taxes, all of those deductions go out the window. Based on the proposal we're looking at, right now, what is ahead? Well, I do think that the December 12th election in Alabama has to be watched. And I'm sure it's being watched by Mitch McConnell because Mitch McConnell knows that he doesn't have 100% certainty at this hour as to the outcome of that election. Now, it bounces here, it bounces there, and nobody really knows. These types of elections are known for low turnouts. We shall see in this case. But no one knows with 100% certainty the outcome of the December 12th Senate election in Alabama. Therefore, when you're talking about a razor-thin margin of 51 to 49, and you can only lose, because I don't think Bob Corker is going to change his vote. I have no reason to believe he will. You're talking about a razor-thin margin of 51-49. You can only lose a couple. Well, no, you can't. You can't lose two more or you're out, right? So he has to be wondering if he should have this thing done by December 11th to make sure he has the votes.